on the house, every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
Come on around back, Arizona, Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, the outdoor living hour of Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition since 1988. This beautiful Saturday morning, Jay Harper's in studio. We're going to be talking about warm season vegetables, and along with anything you'd like to talk about in your landscape or garden, you can join the conversation. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Text questions can be sent to 411-923. You can email us at info@rosieonthehouse.com if you need to send a picture or short video for plant or insect identification or whatever it is you're working on. And Jay, we are 3 days away from spring.
Getting close, huh? Yeah, the Ides of March was yesterday, right? So St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. Spring has sprung. It's springing. It's going to be a boy. The wildflower thing, I think, has already kind of started, and it's going to be a really good one this year.
Got a nice little shower the last couple of days to bring us into the spring season.
Yep. Yeah, March kind of came in like a lion yesterday, didn't it? Although it had already been here, but it's shaping up to be a pretty good spring. And you know, typically we make that transition from cool season vegetables, so those things that, you know, the leafy greens, so to speak, into warm season vegetables, which are, you know, the more what we think of traditionally sometimes as vegetables, things you eat a fruit off of, tomatoes and peppers and squash and cucumbers and melons. And that's been going on. And if you haven't made that transition, you should start quickly because, you know, one of these days we're going to wake up and it's going to be warm. and you don't want to wait till then you're too late. So, yeah. So if you remember that what we plant as cool season vegetables, here are things you eat the leaf of, or maybe the stem or part of the flower of, or a root of. Things that are traditionally warm season vegetables are, again, those things you actually kind of pick a fruit off of, like a tomato or a pepper, squashes, cantaloupes, melons, eggplant, those types of things. So it's time to get them in the ground.
And when will they be ready to harvest? I mean, these aren't crops that are going to last through the summer.
Well, in some cases, maybe, but typically, no. By the time 4th of July kind of rolls around and the nights start getting really warm and they don't cool down, most of those will quit producing, even if the plant lives. Your production will go way down or go away completely. So we generally try and get our tomatoes and things like that in sometime in maybe as early to mid-February through about now, so that you can perhaps be picking fruit by, let's say, Memorial Day, you know, or maybe even Mother's Day. So sometime in mid to late May, depending on the variety, you know, varieties may have various what they call days to maturity. So, you know, a certain tomato may have, let's say you see a number on there that says 70 days. Well, that isn't from the time you plant it. That's from the time it forms its first mature or true leaf. So from the time it's pretty small till the time you should be harvesting fruit is about 2.5 months. So if you planted them in mid-February, so that's mid-March, mid-April, you know, first part of May. In a perfect world.
You got to put that in the perfect world.
But, yeah, so sometime we want to be harvesting in May and maybe through June, because we know that come July, most of those things are gonna kind of poop out on us. Now, there are exceptions to that. Melons, cantaloupes and watermelons, they'll go sometimes all summer. Eggplant certainly will. Rosie's favorite, the okra. clear my throat there. Sometimes, you know, okra will go, you can't hardly kill it. You have to try. yeah, so there are some things, that, you know, if you want something to go all summer, okra, eggplant, melons, they'll do a pretty good job for you.
Now, is there a specific okra plant that they use to make the little ones that they put in the pickle jars?
Just pick them early. Okra is pickable or, you know, harvestable at any point from its formation. And if you don't catch it in the first couple of days, it'll be 6 inches long overnight.
I just must not be good at finding the small ones because we look for them because we try. And then all of a sudden you've got this huge.
Yeah, and they're not very good when they get big.
They get a little stringy.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah. Get tough, get stringy, get kind of pithy, but. Yeah, you gotta pick okra every day. You really do. You gotta go out there maybe twice a day. I don't know, but sure every day. Yeah, you're gonna miss some and whatnot. But yeah, they're hard to see and they're itchy to pick too. You want to wear some gloves or something. That maybe it's just me. Things like figs and okra and even some squashes that the little bristly. Stuff on the stems and leaves just drives me crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
So we've got realistically a pretty decent variety of garden vegetables that we can plant, melons, tomatoes, going up to, you know, I mean, like you said, the plant might live through the summer, but you're not going to have a big production.
Not a big fan of trying to keep tomatoes and things like that going through the summer so you can harvest a few fruit in the fall. I just think it's, you know, it's a bit of a fool's errand spending time and water and resources on something to, you know, that a new plant, if you want to do a second crop in the fall, you know, for a couple of bucks you can buy a new plant and it's going to take off and grow faster and probably be in better shape and depending on the summer, not be totally stressed out. You know, people put up sophisticated shade structures and misters and all this stuff to, you know, to keep a pretty easy to grow inexpensive plant alive. You know, I don't get it. So if you want to enjoy tomatoes through the summer, all summer long, I guess you need to learn to can or have a summer home where you can grow some in the summertime at a higher elevation. But, most of our, you know, and you know what? You want to go on vacation. You don't want to, you know, let's face it, gardening isn't a lot of fun when it's 110 degrees outside. I don't think. So,
can I ask you a quick question there, Jay?
Sure.
So going back to what we can plant, I think you've convinced us summer's not great, so we need to get busy now so mm-hmm. we can get our plants in. Can I just plant seed right in the ground now, or do I need to find starters? I'm already missed that window.
Well, I think you're too late for tomato seed, tomatoes from seed. You could still do like cucumbers and melons and squash from seed in March. That's okay. You got plenty of time on those. Tomatoes, maybe even peppers, I probably. And you know, how many are you going to plant anyway? You know, there's just two of us at home. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of tomato plants is plenty. You know, so when you're planting things from seed, I usually think of things that I'm going to plant a number of. You know, for instance, carrots and beets and leafy lettuces and things like that, I generally start from seed because I'm going to plant a whole bunch of them, a whole row of them. And those things you can kind of harvest a little at a time and that sort of thing. But, you know, when it comes to tomatoes and peppers, I usually just go buy a few plants.
Yeah, that's still pretty economical, like you said, with just a small household.
Yeah.
And so also I was thinking about, you know, when you go to buy the seed, the back of those packages can be pretty confusing. What zone are we?
That's a good question.
Well, they changed it on us recently, didn't they?
They did change. Well,
that's
sub.
Not fair.
You know, so we're nine something, A or B or whatever, but zone 9.
Okay.
if it's USDA, that's you know. So, but again, you're looking at a seed package, and if you don't have a magnifying glass,
right.
you're not going to be able to tell.
But that zoning is pretty important, right? It tells you what kind of climate. I mean, we can, like you said, you can grow anything if you want it bad enough. But if
yes.
you want it something to be reasonably yeah. easy, you would get something from your zone.
And I would probably, as opposed to relying on a seed packet that was maybe produced in Connecticut, I would go to the county extension, cooperative extension service, and look at their recommended planting dates for the Phoenix Salt River Valley, or depending on if you're in Tucson or Prescott or Payson or whatever. I would probably rely more on local knowledge than on seed packs or even the little tags that come in the plants if you buy plants. A lot of those are developed for the whole United States, and they're doing the best they can. And in general, they're pretty accurate. But we are really pretty unique here as far as our climate and timing of planting things. Romy just mentioned that the Farmer's Almanac mentioned, when dandelions start blooming, it's time to plant potatoes. And I said, well, that's probably true in a lot of places, but not here.
Well, we need you to develop that kind of list for us. you have your drought indicator plant. Now we need a list of plants that tell us what to plant.
Yeah, indicator plants for what to plant.
Right.
Yeah, right. So, I would probably try and find local knowledge sources.
Okay.
Even most local nurseries probably have, we did when we were in business, had a sheet that we had on our website that told you what days were best for planting certain crops.
Warm season vegetables was our topic for today. Kind of covered that pretty extensively. What about lawns? I mean, we've still got a decent amount of time left on our lawn, if well maintained, cared for, and fertilized.
Yeah, if you planted a winter lawn or ryegrass lawn, it's probably, with these rains and stuff, it's probably looking the best it's looked all year. And the weather we're going to have the next 60 days is probably in its sweet spot, days getting up into the maybe 80s. Is what it's going to really like. So if you got a ryegrass lawn, just continue to maintain it like you have been. Hopefully, you've had the water shut off for a while. Depending on where you live, yesterday you got a decent rain to maybe a really good rain, and you can keep it shut off. But maybe give it one more fertilizing to get it to go clear through. If you did not plant a winter lawn, you probably start with this moisture if we start hitting some 80 degrees, and I'm not pushing for 80 degrees. But you'll start to see some green up on the dormant Bermuda grasses here pretty quick. The thing we probably are going to get calls need to talk about is probably weeds because of all the rain. They have, and you start getting a few warmer days, and the weeds just talk about.
You said okra
overnight.
You have to pick.
Okra overnight. Talk about overnight, man. You can have weeds that are 2 feet tall overnight when it hits 80 degrees. So, if you have not applied pre-emergent, this is a great opportunity to do it. Soil's nice and moist. I would still do it. It's never too late. It'll still work from here going forward for 3 to 6 months. You're not going to stop what's already coming up. But, I would do that as well. And then stay on top of them. Weeds are a lot easier to control. Trina and I were out for a walk, here a week or so ago, and a lady with an entire rock front yard. And it wasn't small rock. It was like 1 to 3 inch cinder lava type rock. And she had, it was just, and she's out there with a little dig. I thought, oh, my heavens, lady. You've got your work cut out for you. You do not need to go to the gym for a few days or a month. It's going to take a long time to get all those out. So,
and it's not fun working down on the ground.
Especially on that bigger rock. I mean, man, you need some good knee pads or something.
Flamethrower.
Yeah, she'd have been a great candidate for a flamethrower.
Yes, she would have.
I'm about ready to buy one because I've been in broadleaf hell right now. You know, even though my pre-emergent has been put down and everything, most of my property's fine. But, you know, the past couple of weeks, I've had to go out for about 20 minutes, pull 20 minutes.
Well, that's good stretching.
That's a good point.
Stretch, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was visiting a farm in New Mexico the other day, and they had a laser weed control machine.
Do you pull behind a tractor?
Yep.
I've seen those.
And Duncan, I think Duncan Farms out here on the west side has one or two. They're around, but that was the coolest thing to watch that go over, and you could see the little flames where that laser would hit a weed. There'd be just a little instantaneous spark, and that's neat.
And then
someday, you know what, technology, it maybe not in our lifetime, but someday there'll be little laser, you know, weed killers that people can go around with and use themselves in their yard.
That's pretty cool. And it somehow knows the difference between the weed and the crop you're harvesting, and it doesn't zap those.
There's a profile of some type that it recognizes or doesn't recognize. Yeah,
that's but pretty.
This was a field that had not been planted yet. They were just getting ready to plant, and they were just going through and pre-treating. But really neat.
I gave my garden the fire treatment this week.
Did you?
Yep. In between winter, summer harvest, I thought, okay, we got some volunteers here that just got to go away.
Did you call the fire department ahead of time? I didn't plan to do this.
I didn't let it go to that extent.
Okay.
But the whole garden got its high temperature sterilization.
Besides that, it's kind of fun, isn't it?
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, and then when the weeds are green, you know, they don't burn like they do when they're totally dead and dry.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah. I mean, that
you're not
going to
start a big. You're not going to start a big fire. They just kind of wilt up, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Now that doesn't kill the roots. I mean, the roots still under there, and
sometimes
they, you know, they can still come back. But you can burn off the foliage
again if you stay on top of them. Though, when they're little, like this laser thing, you couldn't really even see the weeds. You could just see the spark. I mean, that's how little the weeds were. If you stay on top of it, it's not a big deal. The problem with let's just take this lady's yard, for instance. If she just sprayed that with a weed killer, then she'd have had 6-inch dead weed material throughout her rock. She'd still have to go out and do something with, because it had just been unsightly sitting there. Then the other thing you don't want to do is let them go long enough where they're going to bloom and go to seed, because then you're just going to have seed laying there for next year. So surely take care of them one way or another while they're young and before they flower.
Rick's on the line, wants to talk about watering. We'll get to that right after bottom of the hour news break. And any question you have about your landscape or garden, 1-888-767-4348. 1-888-ROSIE for you.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables.
Is it even the summer? Yeah.
Love you most of all, my favorite vegetable. If you brought a big brown bag of them home, I'd jump up and down and hope you'd toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well my vegetables card off and send.
What the heck was that?
Man.
Gary had to dig way down to find that one.
That's the Beach Boys, for crying out loud. I guess they needed a filler song for an album or something.
I guess.
Let's talk about vegetables. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
What was that old trick about tomatoes, or you put in a paper bag with an apple?
Oh, to ripen them?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Is that?
I actually think that works. The gases that the apples give off will turn the skin red on a tomato. So I think it does work.
Cool. All right, well, let's get to Rick at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. He wants to talk about watering. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. Hey, John Jay. Question about watering. Is there a resource I can go to figure out how much? I've got emitters. I've got irrigation. I have 5 stations. From my phone, I can program it how long, how often. So I've got garden. I've got plants. I've got roses. I've got trees in multiple stations. How can I figure out how often, how much to water? Gallons per minute for the emitters, et cetera.
Could probably tell you, but I'm not sure somebody with a Scottsdale school district education could understand it.
I think you're correct.
Woo. Oh, man.
Well, if they're all already living, you got to be doing something right.
Rick, you know, the best tool for that, believe it or not, is from an organization called AMWA, Arizona Municipal Water Users Association. And they have a little booklet called Landscape Watering by the Numbers. And I forget the page number, but there's a page number in there that gives you a little chart, you know, and based on what kind of, you know, what kind of plant it is and how big the plant is as to about how much water it needs, which is pretty easy to determine if you've got one or two or however many emitters. You generally should know how many gallons an hour that emitter is delivering to that plant. And you can kind of, well, I think maybe you can do the math. I'm not sure. If you have that calculator on that smartphone, you can do the math and figure that out. That's where I would direct you. And if you've got it zoned like it sounds like you do, you've got flexibility to where you can run your trees every 2 weeks and your roses twice a week and, you know, so forth and so on. But
okay, and the name of that resource one more time was?
It's the organization is Arizona Municipal Water Users Association. And the little pamphlet or booklet, which is online, is called Desert Landscaping or Landscaping Watering by the Numbers.
Perfect.
How you been?
Good to hear from you, John.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Good to hear from you. Thanks, Rick.
Yeah, we ought to state the comment about the Scottsdale school system. All of us in the studio are graduates of the Scottsdale.
That's right. So it's self-implicating. And that was one of our old high school classmates calling in.
By the way, the website is amwua.org. That's the main website. You can find it there.
Boy, I can't leave the topic of irrigation because this is the time of year I go through my system. I reprogram it. I go through every head. I get the pebbles out of the spray nozzles. I mean, it's a 2 or 3 weekend endeavor every year.
Yeah, and you know, Rick's on the right track, so he's trying to figure that all out now when you don't need to water.
Yeah.
So when you don't need to water is the time to figure out, okay, what's coming up? Because like it or not, it's coming. That's the love-hate thing we have with spring and Phoenix is, man, it's pretty, but we know what's coming. And
it's the population control device.
Yeah, that's right.
From God.
Yeah, that's right.
we'd be.
Although I don't know, not sure that's working very well.
We'd be 20 million people in Arizona if it weren't for the summers.
I'm not sure it's working very well.
Man.
If you've driven to Santan Valley and Coolidge and Florence and
it's
Buckeye.
Say Buckeye passed by. What was it? Miller and Hazen, I think, or Miller and MC85. And they've got apartment complexes and Buckeye going up. What is this?
And it's not for the cattle.
No.
Yeah. It's not a feedlot.
But, yes, it's kind of like your roof. Fix your roof before it starts leaking, right? So check your watering system. And the best way to do it's really with more than one person. If you can have two people. And we in the old days we used to use radios. Now you can use your cell phone, and somebody turned the clock on, and I'm out there walking it, and hey, shut it off, or, you know, whatever, or go to the next station. Or, but, yeah, I was visiting with somebody the other day, and they were talking about these plants. You know, they had six plants, and not all of them were doing the same thing. I said, well, how long has it been since you changed emitters? Because I guarantee you they're not working the same as when you put them in, or all working the same. And he said, yeah, some of them just barely drip, and some of them, I said, well, see, exactly. You need to
blow them out.
Just blow them out, or just go buy, they're cheap.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy a packet of 20 emitters for, you know, a few bucks. So I just keep a packet. I have whatever kinds I'm using in my yard, I have a packet of each one of those in my garage, so that when one disappears, it's amazing how they just happen to come off. You walk out there and you see a stream of water shooting in the air. I don't know how they come off, but anyway, get yourself spare drip emitters and a little extra tubing, and so you can do those little repairs. The one good thing about drip systems is they're pretty darn easy to fix. You know, it's not like PVC where you got to cut it and glue it and, you know, all that stuff. So,
you know,
yeah,
back,
great idea. Great advice is to check that water system, you know,
right
when it's
now.
70 instead of when it's 170.
Yeah.
And you've already got four or five dead things that as a result.
Plus, it's a whole lot nicer working in the yard right now. Amen. If you're out in the middle of the day, you know.
Well, back years ago when you and I had the Harper Romero water challenge about who could cut their water bill, I would get a lot of questions about that. And it was that challenge that convinced me. My January water consumption over the years is about 1/8 what it is in July and August.
An eighth.
An eighth.
So we tell people a rule of thumb. So if you take either your winter, if you can do it from either direction. So let's just say your winter watering, you know, when you go to spring, it's going to be double winter. And then when you go to summer, you're going to double spring. And then you're going to go the opposite direction. When you go to fall, you're going to cut it in half. And when you go to winter, you're going to cut it in half again. So, you know, somewhere around a fourth to an eighth. Yeah.
Well, I've become very vigilant. When it rains, that unit gets turned off.
Absolutely.
It turns off till I turn it back on.
Yeah, I've told people for years that if you want to conserve water, wintertime is the time to conserve water. Because most of us, even now, like I said, how many people even have their systems turned off? It should be off. You know, we've had pretty much every 2 weeks some type of rain event. And unless you have really high water using plants in maybe containers, or you're trying to start spring or warm season vegetable seeds, you really shouldn't have had to water anything for a couple of months. So that's when you can really save. It's hard to overwater when it's 110 degrees. You know, you can pretty much pour the water to it and it'll love it. But when it's 60, 65, 70, and the nights are in the 40s and you're raining and you've got dew on the ground and things are wet, you can pretty generally cut that to zero.
Now, when you were talking about the drip emitters, you know, the way the drip irrigation is, you've got your plastic tube that's your supply line. Then you've got a little connector that you punch in, little spaghetti string, and on the end you put in how many gallons per minute that drip emitter is supposed to allow to come out. Now, I do know
supposed
some people,
to is a key word.
Right. And I do know some people that put the drip emitter straight into the pipe.
Correct.
And then just leave the spaghetti string open.
Correct.
You know, one less piece to push in. And the problem I have found with that, and especially, have you played with the adjustable ones at all?
Oh, yeah.
You can turn them in. They're supposed to go from 1 to 10 gallons.
I have
per
those
minute.
In my pots.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
On all those drip emitters, and I don't care if it's the rotating ones or the static standard size, they clog up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, especially if it's off for any period of time.
Yep.
And you go to turn it back on, the salts, you know, have gummed it up and have leaked it. So, I mean, you almost can't let the drip irrigation rest to keep the solids, prevent solids from building up.
Well,
from
that,
what I've been playing with.
That's true. And, you know, depending on your water and everything else, the other stuff that might grow in those pipes. But, yeah, so that's why you just need to, before summer, go through and take all the emitters off or blow them out or put new ones on. You know, for the price of new ones, it's probably worth doing. There's also some new stuff. My brother Jerry's still in that business, and he's using a different type of tubing now. It's not PVC. It's bendable and flexible, but it's not like the black poly stuff we've used. It's much more rigid than that. And you literally have to cut it and put, what are those things, shark bites or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
You do it with
connectors.
Shark bite connectors in that. And you do put it more like a single port emitter in the in line and then run the poly tubing. And the nice thing about those is, you know, everybody that's got poly tubing, the old drip emitters, that drip systems that were put in 20 to 30 years ago, they're starting to fall apart, basically. You're out there like the Dutch boy in the dike. You know, you've got fingers, you're fixing leaks every weekend. And you're going to keep fixing leaks every weekend because that pipe has just reached its usable stage. So he's converting a lot of people from that type of tubing into this other, I don't remember the name of it. But anyway, I think.
I like that.
It's a great system. And he did mine when I redid mine and some neighbors. And I think he probably gets that at Ewing probably or somebody like that. But it's a lot easier to, and you seem to get more consistent water flow out of your emitters with that than you do with the other more poly type stuff.
And the Landscape Garden Hour with Jay Harper. And, you know, one thing that I was talking with somebody about this the other day, they were complaining about how when you go to the nursery, there's so many flowers. And he's like, why are we wasting water on flowers? You know, if you're going to grow something, it should be something you can eat. And I'm like, well, just because you don't eat the flowers doesn't mean that the flowers aren't being used to help you eat. You know, the pollinators, you know, the colors that bring those, you know, these attract the type of insects you need to your garden that help you eat.
Well, certainly, and not all flowers, to be honest with you, are necessarily pollinators, but they certainly might attract a pollinator to your garden. You know, I don't know how to say this diplomatically, but
we're not diplomatic here, not in this hour.
You've already stepped on the whole Scottsdale School District. So just go at it.
Well, Jeff. I was implicating myself in that statement. So it's like people ask me where I went to college and ASU. That, you know, proves I'm a self-made man, you know. mental health and well-being is, I think, just as, if not as important as physical health. Growing food is important. Beauty and peace of mind and everything is, I think, also very important. And aesthetics are important. So if we get to the point where we can't plant a few flowers to make things prettier and to look nicer, that sort of thing, I think, you know, there's always going to be a place for having, you know, some ornamental horticulture as opposed to just growing things for the pure functionality of it. In fact, I'll just make the comment that most people that are growing a vegetable garden, you shouldn't even be doing that because you can't do it as efficiently as a commercial farmer can. So you are wasting resources by growing a vegetable garden in your home in most cases. Now, why are you vegetable gardening? Probably because, you know, you like to do it. It's healthy. It's exercise. It gets you outside, and you get some fresh produce out of the deal. But if we want to shrink it down to just pure, down to the bones, how are we spending our resources, then nobody should grow a home vegetable garden either. So how's that for getting on the soapbox?
I like it. I like the beauty aspect and just the mental health. You know, even just the gardening and getting outside in the fresh air and getting away from the computer and all the details of life, it's a great getaway. It's a pretty cheap getaway. You're not getting on an airplane and burning fuel, right?
Yeah, your carbon footprint's not very big. Right. In fact, you're planting plants and they're taking carbon out of the atmosphere to make oxygen. So,
there you go.
You know, we can store up some carbon credits here.
Well said.
And when we're looking at, you know, our complete landscape, you got your trees, your grass, your lawn, vegetable gardens, flowers, you know, all those things that are working to create your complete backyard landscape. Which element, you know, the trees provide shade, and there are some areas of shade. Mm-hmm. You know, that we enjoy, but then the food doesn't grow in the shade. So I mean, the amount of balance, it takes a lot of trial, error, and observation.
True. And, and depending on the time of the year, it might not be in the shade. You might be able to grow a winter garden there because the shade has shifted the angle of the sun. So you just, you know, it's all-encompassing. But shade is certainly something here in the desert that's very, very important. In fact, it's one of the first things that APS or SRP will tell you to do if you're going to cut down on your energy use is to shade
the house.
The house, whether it's with a tree or with something else. So, you can't just look at one aspect and go, everything's got to produce everything that you plant in your yard's got to produce fruit. Or it can't just be maybe the other way either, where everything is just totally ornamental. We got to have shade, so it's holistic, that's the word I'm looking for, maybe, approach to landscaping that's important. You know, my mom had a saying, she'd tell my dad when she went and spent some money on something, she said, well, it's cheaper than a shrink. So it's therapeutic.
One quick text question to wrap up real quick. Bermuda has been completely overtaken by clover. What can he do to get rid of that in time to have a beautiful Bermuda this summer?
Well, if the Bermuda, then I would assume at this point is probably still dormant. You know, the clover, you can spray with a broadleaf weed killer. You could go in and burn it. If they're, you know, really, in some places in the country, they burn their lawns in the wintertime. So it wouldn't really hurt the Bermuda if you wanted to just burn that stuff off.
Just careful for your sprinkler heads.
Yeah, that's a good point. Pulling them, you know, however you want to do, get rid of the clover. Now's, you know, when you want to do it, because it's just going to go to seed and be worse again next year if you don't deal with it now. And then next year, use a pre-emergent in the fall.
Call Ray Lopez at Scottsdale Weed. That'd be my number.
There you go.
Hey, if I could be king, I would make the next hour mandatory listening for everyone. I'm going to be on a soapbox all hour about the solar power industry. This is an hour you can't miss. If you've ever considered getting a solar system or you know someone, call them. They've got to tune in this next hour.